Welcome to our Kobe Seder, and today we have a tall order. We're learning 16 chapters of Yevamos. The first chapter is called Chamesha Sre Noshim. I think we maybe need to do half this today and half on Tuesday. But the first chapter talks about 15 women and what these 15 women have in common regarding the mitzvah of Yibum. Yibum is the mitzvah of marrying the widow of a brother who died childless. And much of these issues that we're raising is regarding something that no longer exists in the Jewish community, at least not in the Ashkenazic Jewish community, which is polygamy or bigamy, is a man with more than one wife. So here is the situation of these 15. Is that if a man has two wives and one of them is inherently forbidden to his brother, in other words, a man is married to Rachel and Leah, right? And his brother is the father of one of those wives. Very common in the Talmudic times to marry, if you had a much older brother, you married her daughter, married your niece. A woman can't marry her nephew, but a man can marry his niece. So he's married to his brother's daughter and another woman, right? And then that man dies childless. So, of course, the brother can't do Yibum on his daughter. But the question is, can he do Yibum on the other woman? This poor man died without a child. So maybe someone will take one of the wives. And what these 15 women have in common is they're all such cases where if the brother was married to one woman that his surviving brother can't marry for whatever reason, then in these 15 women, not only does he not marry the one that's forbidden to him, but he doesn't marry the one who is the other one as well. It's called the tzara, the co-wife. Right? It's a fundamental dispute between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai. Beis Hillel says that second woman gets to go free without even needing the chalitza. Yibum is where the brother takes the wife. Chalitza is where he refuses just to take off his shoe, spit in front of his face, and then she's free to remarry outside of the family. So already in the time of the Mishnah, it seems that the Jewish community preferred chalitza over yibum. Because for a man to marry his brother's wife is also a type of erva. Outside of Yibum, if the brother died with children, then such a marriage is forbidden under pain of kares. It's like marrying your sister, the same as marrying your sister-in-law. But in one case, if the brother died childless, then not only is it allowed, it's a mitzvah. So that is an unusual case. But the Mishnayos tell us is that Yibum only allows one erva, your sister-in-law, but not two, not if she also happens to be your daughter, right? Or your wife's sister, or any one of those other 15 cases, right? Okay, so that's Beis Hillel's opinion. Beis Shammai holds that not only can the brother marry that other woman, the one that's not incest to him, the other woman, but that woman needs a chalitza to be free. She can't just go and remarry just without any chalitza, like Beis Hillel holds. This is the famous Gemara at the end of the first parak that speaks of Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai having fundamental disputes, and yet they married each other into each other's families, even though they had these really fundamental disputes. Beis Hillel allows a marriage that Beis Shammai thinks is kares. And on the other side, Beis Hillel allows a woman to go free that Beis Shammai holds shouldn't be able to go free unless she has a chalitza. Okay, that's basically the topic of the first chapter. Second chapter talks about another case, starts with the case of Achiv Shelohaya Ba'olamo, is that the parsha of Yibam in the Torah starts off Ki Yeshu Achim Yachdov, if two brothers live together, we have to do Yibam even if they don't live together. The answer is that they have to at least been alive together. When Naomi tells Ruth in the beginning of Megillas Rus that go home because no one's going to want to marry you in Israel because you're Moabite and they hate Moabites. Your father, according to Chazal, was the king of Moab. had subjugated the Jews for many years. And besides, the Torah says, Lo yavo amoni amovi b'kal Hashem, that Moabites and Ammonites shouldn't marry into our Kehillah. So what hope do you have in Israel? The only one who could possibly marry you would be another son of mine, because one of my sons married you. Right? At the end of the story, there seems to be an Indian of perpetuating the name of Ruth's husband. Right? But then she says, even if I had a child today, you're going to wait for him to grow up and marry you? As if though that's the only hope you have of ever getting married in Israel. Naomi doesn't mean that literally, because such a boy couldn't marry Ruth because he was never alive at the same time as Ruth's dead husband, Mahlon. Right? That's what the second chapter is about. And otherwise, maybe a woman whose husband died childless, even if he has no brothers, should always wait. Maybe that husband's mother is still going to have a child. Right? Okay. So the next chapter starts talking about cases that really need a chalkboard to go, to explain. About four brothers married to four sisters, and we're not sure which one is which. Anyway, there's a whole bunch of opinions there. The fourth perek is called Perek HaCholetz, which is that a man did chalitza right after his brother died so that the woman could go free. And then he finds out that she's pregnant with his brother's child, in which case she didn't really need that chalitza. Now, for Yibum, we always wait 3 months to do Yibum. Always wait 3 months, because if the woman is pregnant, the assumption is with her brother's child, then Yibum is forbidden, because then the man did not die childless. He died, well, technically he did, but he died having impregnated his wife with what possibly is a memory of him, be named after him. You see, when a woman is a widow, we hope that she has an opportunity to remarry. But if she wants to name a child after her first husband, the second husband is not going to be happy. Every time she calls out the name, she's longing to be married to someone else. But if it's the brother is okay with that. I also want to perpetuate the memory of my brother. Right? So, but in any event, we never allow such a thing to go on, except if it's after 3 months, to make sure that the woman in question is not pregnant. Okay? Okay, the fifth parak talks about different aspects of preparing for Yibum. There is a rule that in order to do Yibum, the rabbis enacted a takana that we do something called mimer. Mimer is a wedding. They're going to say, of course they need a wedding. He's going to become the husband of this widow. True, but according to the Torah, he's lacking nothing to be the new husband except to take her into his house. The shidduch was made by God, who took the brother before he had a child. So let's say Reuven and Shimon are brothers. Reuven is married and dies childless. So Shimon just tells Reuven's wife, okay, come into my house now. Now you're going to be my wife. No wedding, no ring, no kiddushin, nothing. The marriage is just that you're now my wife. You've a mayav olel, right? He inherits the ksuva. He takes over the family. And, there's no children, of course. If there were, you couldn't do this. But because it just doesn't sit right with the rabbis, they enacted a wedding, that the brother should go through all the trappings of a wedding and then take her home and do and be a husband now that the wedding is over. That wedding is called mimer. But that wedding does not actually create the completion of the Yibum until he consummates the marriage. Okay, the fifth parak talks about this and different aspects of the mimer. If he wants to break the bonds right after the wedding, they would need a get and a chalitza for her to be free to marry someone else. Okay, the sixth parak, and I think we'll stop with this. Maybe we'll have to break down Yevamos into a few different chapters. The sixth parak talks about performing the din of Yibum, that b'shogeg, b'mezid, b'onis, b'rotzen, all kinds of different ways. And this actually, the end of this is beautiful parak about the laws of Pirei V'Rivya and how we fulfill to be fruitful, multiply. And this is that's what chapter six is about. Okay, as you can see, Yevamos begins Seder Noshim with a lot of laws of marriage, but it starts off with the laws of marriage after a tragedy where the brother died childless. It's interesting that the Masechta that teaches the laws of marriage, Kiddushin, is at the very end of Nashim. It's the last Masechta in Nashim because it connects to the next Seder, which is Nizikin, and we'll get to there in a few weeks. Okay, we're going to continue Mirtz Hashem with the middle of Vamos. It sets us back a little in schedule, but we're going to continue with Perek Zion of Yevamos next time. Mirtz Hashem. Have a great day, everybody. I call the Seder.
Thank you.
And have a wonderful day. Stay healthy, stay well, stay safe. Bye-bye.